Good morning, my name is Keegan Rasko, and I'd like to welcome you to Life Downstream. Life Downstream is a radio show where me, a high school student, and Mr. Morgan, my high school English teacher, talk to people from Astoria about their lives and their experiences and how those experiences allowed them to learn outside of the classroom. And with that, I'd like to hand it over to Mr. Morgan to introduce our guest for this week.
So I want to welcome Dulcie Taylor to Life Downstream. Dulcie has been living in Astoria now for 12 years. She owns a small business downtown and volunteers for a number of different community initiatives. Dulcie, welcome.
Thank you.
So I wanted to start by asking, I know you recently ran for mayor, and I just wanted to ask what that process was like. I know a lot of people don't get the chance to do that in their lifetimes. So what's something that you kind of took away from that process, something you learned?
Well, first of all, I would like to say I never considered running for mayor ever in my whole life. But in moving to Astoria, I never considered being a volunteer either. So a lot of things changed over time. But running for mayor was a very interesting process. People are passionate about Astoria. Mm. And they, not everybody wants to talk to you, but a lot of people want to talk about, I call them the three H's. They were the homeless, the housing, and the hole.
Briefly, could you tell listeners who maybe don't know what the hole is about the hole?
It's the old Safeway lot that's now called Heritage Square, but it's got that big hole where the basement of Safeway used to be, and it's been there for, I'm going to say, 15 years or so. Covered for a short amount of time, but now open and surrounded by a cyclone fence. I think there's some ideas in the afoot to make that look more beautiful. We'll find that out later.
Did people have any kind of suggestions for what they, any creative ideas for like what they wanted to be done with it?
Yes. A skate park. A lot of people wanted a skate park. Some people think we should fill it in with water. Some people think we should just fill it in so it's grass. Originally, the plans of that block were to make it make the whole block a public space, and that would be an amphitheater, which I thought was a pretty cool idea.
That's cool. I know that you have a framing store in town, and you've owned it since 2006. What's it been like kind of getting into this new industry? You hadn't framed before or worked in that industry before you bought the shop. What's it been like over the last 13 years running the business? What's something you've kind of learned as you've gone along?
Well, I really had to learn everything because I had things framed, right? But I didn't know framing per se. So I really had to start from the ground up. And even before I purchased the building, the business, I would come in and Joe and Charlotte, the people that owned the business, would teach me about what they did as far as, you know, keeping the books and ordering and inventory control and that kind of stuff. And then I am an artist by edumacation and passion. I have an eye for color and design. So that was a pretty easy part. But, you know, I came from I came from a pixel world and I had to move to a fraction world. And that was a little mind twisting.
So do you mean that, you know, just all the measurements and, you know, did that kind of take some getting used to?
How often do you add 7/8 and 3/4?
Good point.
It was just going back to fourth grade or whatever when you learn your fractions, and you don't use fractions. I mean, you use maybe a half and a quarter, and we use half and a quarter and an eighth and a sixteenth, but when you have to add a 7/8 and 3/4, and it's like a... It's like makes my eyes spin a little bit, even today.
If somebody is listening to the show and they have an idea for a small business, they want to kind of get into being their own boss and running their own business, what advice would you give to somebody who's about to kind of set out in that direction?
I would say do all of your homework. Do your business plan, find, you know, an attorney and an accountant and people that you trust to advise you to how you organize your business as far as for tax purposes. And just make sure that you know that you are in this to win, seriously, because in most new businesses fail like in the first 3 years, right? Because you don't have enough information, if you will, to succeed.
And I think some of those steps, you know, if someone has a really small business, some of that stuff might be things that people assume they'll just do as it gets bigger, or like, you know, I'll probably do that in year five. I'll, you know, get this lined up and get this lined up. But it sounds like you're saying, do it first.
I would do it first. And we do have resources in Astoria, well, in Clatsop County, actually, that can help you with that. The CETA small and the small business, small SBDC.
Yeah, SBDC.
There's resources that will help you for free get a business plan and some your feet into that water.
So I know that, you know, what you're doing now, it's dramatically different from what you did when you were back in Seattle.
Yes.
You worked for Microsoft from 1996 to 2006, and you were an animator. I'm really curious what your takeaway was from that decade at Microsoft. You know, you got this glimpse kind of behind the curtain. You know, you saw what it was like to work for this massive corporation. Could you talk a little bit about that?
You know, a funny thing is that I never wanted to work for big corporations were not really my idea of a fun place. And Microsoft was really not one of my favorite big corporations. But what I found when I got in there, and I went to work as a freelancer, so I was on a 3-month gig, supposedly, that worked into 10 years, but is that, and I think this is true in any, in towns, in business, is that you find there's a group of people that are working for the same, towards the same goodness, right? You are working as a team. You want to achieve this thing in front of you. And they're just people like you and me. Bill Gates, I never met Bill Gates in 10 years of working at Microsoft. I didn't even glimpse him, except on television, of course. So there's all those biggies that, you know, started the business and run the business and tell everybody trickling down to me what to do. But at the end of the day, you're working with you and me and a bunch of other people just trying to do the thing that you were hired to do.
I know you, when we had talked earlier, you'd mentioned that, you know, it's working for a big corporation. It can be lucrative, you know, over time you can get these promotions. What was that kind of process like to go from a freelancer to somebody now who has the salaried position, is managing other people and all this extra responsibility? You know, if you could do that again, would you have kind of followed that same path through the corporation and, you know, following those promotions, following all that, those?
Well, I love that question because there's a part of me that, you know, thinks that I left that corporate energy pack too early. But I love Astoria and I love being here. So I'm going to have to say I wouldn't change how that whole thing happened. I would, my career at Microsoft was unique in that I worked 2 years as a freelancer. So, which really was just full time. I mean, that was at a certain time, they got into trouble for hiring so many freelance people, and I was one of those people. So you either had to sign up to play for real, or you had to take a year off. So I just said, "What are you going to give me?" And was that enough? It was. You make crazy money working at that. I don't know now, but I had never made that much money in my whole life, and so they call them golden handcuffs. Handcuffs for a reason, because you know, you start buying things and you start spending a lot of money and going into debt. Well, I tried not to do that. I just tucked it away, and because I wasn't used to making money anyway. So I was just passionate about art, and I was passionate from the time I was a kid about animation. So The chance to do that was just made me happy.
I think this is an interesting thing for me, because being in the high school, you know, I talk with kids all the time about what they want to do in their future and or with their future. And I think a lot of students aspire to kind of get a salaried position that gives benefits and has a consistent income. And that kind of, you know, Keegan's over there like nodding and saying, yeah. And I just think, you know, these two paths, like to freelance and to be a part of the gig economy, and the other one, which is like to kind of have the salaried position, sometimes kind of I don't know if everybody is aware of kind of what going down that road could potentially lead, where, you know, you, if you do a great job, you could get a promotion and then get another promotion and then be managing people. And you could kind of, in your case, you drifted away from the initial thing that you loved, which was the animation.
Right.
So I don't know, Keegan, what's your perspective on this? Do you ever think, okay, when I think about my future, the ideal scenario is to have like a salaried position? Do you want to work for yourself?
Well, I think that a lot of kids don't associate like working from gig to gig with making a lot of money. I think they automatically just look at it and say there's nothing to be had there.
Yeah.
I think that there's an over association with high income. Basically, you get a lot of money on salaries. There's too much association with a salary job paying a lot, which today is not really true anymore. We don't have businesses giving those kinds of benefits that they used to 20, 30 years ago. So students need to look at it with more of an open eye, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're a great example of how even just doing what you love, sticking to what you love, can even lead into a high-paying salary job, and I think that's important for students to recognize.
Mm.
You have to be passionate about what you do, because then life is so much less if you're just drudging along.
Yeah.
So pick, when you're thinking about a career, think about what you're passionate about. I mean, I went back to school when I was 40 because a program opened up for the Art Institute in Seattle, and they were opening up a animation and illustration program. And I went down, I had no money at all.
Hmm.
And I went down, I said, I saw this in the paper and I have no money. And they're like, oh, you don't need money.
And you were painting houses before that,
I was painting
that,
houses,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting. The previous guest that we had interviewed on the show, Jeff Daly, he brought up a similar idea where he said moments in his life where he chose to just follow a random lead, you know, just to jump, to take a risk. A lot of those moments were moments that, you know, because he trusted his gut, he trusted his intuition, they led him, you know, to some sort of positive path. And I know that's something that you really believe in too, right? This idea of like intuition, trusting your gut.
Yeah, totally.
Hmm.
I mean, you you can be, I mean, if you're not passionate about something, then it just is drudgery, and drudgery is death to me. So,
yeah. I wonder kind of how many people out there have the courage in those moments where it's starting to feel like just a grind, and year after year, it's starting to feel that way. How many people have the courage to kind of say, okay, I need to do just a 90-degree turn here and change it up and mix it up?
It's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds scary. It sounds like this is an intense thing.
Are you thinking about another career right now?
No, I'm not. Yeah, no, thankfully.
You better not be.
I just think I think it's really interesting kind of having that perspective of working for this huge multinational corporation, and now you're working for your own boss. You work for this business here in town. I know when you were in Seattle, late 90s, right?
I moved there in 86, yeah.
Okay. So you watched it go through this massive change. And I'm curious, you know, Seattle, it's everyone knows that when you drive through Seattle, you see all these cranes all the tech companies have totally kind of changed the landscape of the city. When you look at that gentrification that's happened there and these big changes, how does that make you look at what's going on in Astoria? I know it's totally different here, but when you look at the changes that our town is going through, I don't know, what does that make you think of?
Well, I think that, I mean, some of the efforts that are going on right now with City Council and Planning Commission about how our river looks, you know, the development that could possibly occur on there. I think I totally, in my heart, I love the river, but I also think that we have to leave room for development, not like Seattle, however.
No.
Because Seattle has become I've been away for 12, almost 13 years, and I get lost going back to Seattle. I drove in that tunnel in the Big Bertha. I don't know the name of the tunnel, but it used to be 99, but where the big drilly thing got stuck. Yeah, well, I drove in that just earlier this year, and it is like it has none of the heart and soul of a Seattle driving underground from one end of town to the other. Even though it's probably safer, maybe. I mean, you're underground. How can you know?
So do you feel like, you know, it's inevitable that there's going to be development and change in Astoria?
There has to be change. I mean, it's just like moving from taking that leap from working at Microsoft to buying a business. Things have to change. You can't just sit still. You'll die.
Yeah.
But managing that change and considering what you want your town to be in 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years, I think that's worthy of thought, and everybody should think about that and participate in the process.
So I know that your partner, Maggie, she lives in Gearhart, and Maggie essentially was what brought you down to this area, right? From Seattle.
Yes, indeed.
I'm really curious to hear your perspective on just what you think, what it's been like to kind of observe this huge shift in the national consciousness surrounding LGBTQIA issues. In your lifetime, there's just been kind of this awakening, right? This sort of
absolutely
this change in just how people feel about the issue. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I didn't come out until I was 26, and I came out in Boise, which was back in that zillion years ago. You gays, women or men were not really they were discriminated against. That was not, you know, it was. They didn't. They weren't visible. Yeah. So when I moved to Seattle, it was like a breath of fresh air because they were a little more liberal there, and I felt a little more comfortable. But still, you know, there was a piece of town that was a piece of the population of Seattle, even though it was so liberal and gay, if you will. You know, there's still things that you have to be careful of, and still discrimination against same-sex couples. So the difference, I mean, and then today, you know, I married my wife 3 years ago, and I never thought I would ever say that, that I married the woman that I love. So, because that's just like a mind-blowing thing to me, being 62 years old and going through, you know, basically being invisible and hiding to actually saying on the radio that I have a wife. I mean, that's weird.
Yeah. I'm curious, you know, if there's, I work with high school students all the time, and Keegan's a high school student. And so with so many of these different issues, I'm always thinking, what's this like for a high school student to process? What's this like for a high school student to think about? If there is some younger person listening to the show right now who is trying to kind of navigate their own sexual orientation and just in a really uncertain time in their lives. I don't know, what would you say to somebody like that who's listening to the show?
Well, I would say a couple of things. One, be patient. It does get better. You are brave in even identifying, even thinking about how you feel in that regard, and you can, and you will survive. You will. We were talking earlier, and the analogy of whitewater rafting and how you, I've been whitewater rafting, and I really don't like it very much, so I'm always very nervous about it. But the guides would always say, if you fall out of the boat, just let the water carry you. and you'll be okay. Don't, if you fight it, then you, something bad might happen.
Yeah.
And I kind of think of, young people discovering who their sexual identity is, kind of like that. You have to just like take a deep breath and ride the tide and don't fight it. Just be as smart and kind to yourself as you can.
Dulcy Taylor, thank you so much. This was awesome having a chance to sit down and chat with you. Where can people find you? What are you working on these days? Tell us a little bit about what you have on your plate right now.
Well, for the last 10 years, the Downtown Association has been my passion, and my frame store has been the passion. Old Town Framing Company, right in downtown Astoria. I have a great staff of three women that do everything from design your projects to put the whole thing together and cut your frame. So come and visit us sometimes. The Downtown Association, I have stepped down as the president of that organization, but I still sit on the board. And last night we just finished our big event, the Jane Barnes Review, where we put about 20 men and women. We put them in different outfits and pranced them down a 32-foot catwalk. And we had a great, the whole thing was great, but we had a special call last night about the Merwin Hotel between the library and City Hall has received its funding. And hopefully by the time this airs, that is public knowledge.
Yeah.
I think it will be. And so we had a paddle raise to try to, Julie Garver, one of the people involved and working her butt off to get funding for that building, was there. And we had a paddle raise that, I'm not sure how much it raised. I think a couple thousand dollars. And so we're very excited. That building will be workforce housing with some probably more spendier apartments up at the top of the building, but it'll be so super cool. And I know that they'll really move on that.
Cool.
I sit on the board of the Historical Society now, and I'm really excited for them to get their membership up and going.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows?
Are there any events or different fundraising things that folks should be kind of aware of that are coming up in the next month or two?
Oh, yeah. Always. There's I volunteer for a lot of different things. One of my hats is a running hat, which is very odd because I don't run. But the Run on the River for the Astoria Parks and Recs Foundation is coming up in May, and they need volunteers to work that. You can do a search. I didn't bring the information on that, but you can either run in it. I mean, it has 5K to a half
marathon. Or,
yeah.
Okay.
Running on the riverfront or around the riverfront because they have that construction going on.
Oh, yeah.
I sit on the board of the Cascadia Opera Company, which is trying to bring opera and educate people about opera in Astoria.
Cool.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll do some stuff in schools about that. And whatever I can plug into. I mean, stuff that I'm passionate about, you know, downtown, history, Astoria, music.
Cool.
Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
Keegan, you know, it's really interesting. I can't help but notice that over these last two shows, both guests have kind of talked about the same thing, right? Like Dulcy and Jeff both brought up this idea of embracing new opportunities, new identities, you know, kind of not resisting change, embracing newness and novelty in one's life. And I'm sitting here kind of thinking about this show and thinking about the first show we recorded. And I'm thinking about how that kind of applies to my own life. And I feel like, you know, recently, this has really hit home for me personally. My wife and I just had a little baby, and she is 2 weeks old at this point. And you know, before I became a father, I really was nervous about becoming a father. And for a lot of years, I kind of felt like, you know, is this something that I'll be able to do well? Is this something that's going to totally upend my life? And you know, how will I be able to kind of embrace that new identity? And honestly, now that we've been doing this for 2 weeks, and I know I'm not like a professional at this, I'm not an expert at any, by any means, we're still totally new, you know, in the parent role, but, it's been amazing. And I realized that my fears were kind of unfounded. They, and I don't even know where they came from. I don't even know why, I was so kind of nervous about diving into this. But you know, this thing that both guests have talked about so far has really resonated with me. Like, you know, I realize that this fatherhood thing, it's so much what we make it and what I make it. And I have a little bit of control over kind of like how I frame it and how I think about it. And what Dulcy brought up about, you know, kind of pushing against the current and how futile that is. I feel like, you know, I'm kind of living this thing right now. You know, it was really futile for me, what's the right way to put it? I felt like I shouldn't have for so long been nervous about this thing that I knew little about. I should have done kind of what Dulcy and Jeff were both talking about, which was take the leap, take the plunge. Like, what can go wrong if you approach something with a positive mindset, you know? So I don't know, that's kind of how I was thinking about, you know, this show's theme.
Yeah. Well, I was like, I just picked up Frankenstein, the book, this week. And in the beginning, you have this character who has the four letters, you know, of course, he's talking about this journey he wants to go on, and he keeps justifying to himself, well, what can go wrong with a person who's driven by such a big purpose, such a big need? And I think a lot of that comes through in daily life, that if you allow yourself to push yourself that hard, there's nothing that can go wrong. And I think that that's what these people communicate, and I think that that's kind of a part of the human experience in general.